You may be aware that in the Catholic way the readings are set out, the first reading is in some way paired with the gospel, and the second reading is something we just start in St. Paul or St. Peter, one of the epistles, and go through that reading. And every now and then it just happens that all three line up, and today is one of those days. So when we think about the first reading in Joshua, this is at the very end of Joshua's life. And so it's sort of like the last thing that he says to the Jews. Who are you going to serve? Now, why would he ask them that question? Well, if you read everything that comes before that, you have them at every step of the way from the moment before they even leave Egypt, complaining against God. They saw the 10 plagues that only afflicted the Egyptians and did not afflict the Jews. And then they saw the Red Sea open up and across they went. But yet every single time they complained against God. And now when Joshua is getting ready to die, he has led them into the promised land. Everything that needed to be done was done because Joshua was completely faithful to the Lord. And the reason I mention this particularly is because of who Joshua was. He was a good and strong leader, faithful in the ways of the Lord and strong in leading the people. And the people were willing to follow him. And it tells us in the next, the book right after Joshua, the first thing it says is the people were faithful to Joshua and to what he had taught them and to the Lord for many generations. And it gives a profound influence of what a good and faithful servant and leader can do. And I mention this particularly in light of the second reading. For many centuries, there were no choices at wedding masses for a couple getting married. This reading from St. Paul to the Ephesians was always read up until about 1970. And as you can imagine, if you think about everything that's happened in the last 100 years, it's not the most popular reading in the Bible. Because even though it starts out with brothers and sisters, be subordinate to one another out of reverence for Christ, after the next line, almost no woman pays attention to the rest of the reading. Wives, be submissive to your husbands as to the Lord. And so the interpretive key to listening to Paul's letter to the Ephesians, while in a certain way we can look at Joshua and see what it means to be a strong and good leader in the ways of the Lord, the obvious interpretation that we need to look at, St. Paul tells us this himself, is Jesus Christ. Now, what happens when many people get married? They're young, and there's one thing, I'm not saying that they don't care about it, but they're not thinking about it all that strongly. And that's heaven and how you're going to get there. But if you're going to be subordinate to someone, that means you're going to put yourself under his mission. And if you don't put Jesus Christ in this reading, all you have is a domestic tyrant. And that is not what the church teaches. The church is expecting her men to lead the family to heaven. If you listen to the opening collect when we started Mass, everything about the opening collect was about heaven. And so when you think about wives, be submissive to your husbands as to the Lord, husbands, you have to be like Christ. You have to lead the family to heaven. And then if you go down a few more lines, you get the sort of the direction and how to do that. You're to love your wife as Christ loves the church and handed himself over for her. Now, in every Catholic church, we have an image of how Jesus handed himself over to the Lord, over to the church for her. And I've said this many times, and I'm sure I'll say it again. Every time you look at that crucifix, the first thing that should come to your mind is God's love for you. And for all of you husbands, the next thing that should come to mind is that's how I'm supposed to love my wife. Now, it doesn't mean you literally have to be crucified. But you have to love with a sacrificial love. And in a real way, that comes in a certain way, that comes naturally to women, especially after they have a child. But men have to learn it. We are by our nature a little bit more selfish, a little bit more self-centered, and we have a harder time thinking of others than women do. And so St. Paul has given quite a challenge in the letter to the Ephesians, a challenge to the women to be under the mission of their husbands, and a challenge to the men, one, to have the mission, and two, to love like Christ, to be selfless instead of selfish. And so then when we go to the gospel, not just particularly the gospel we heard today, but the mission is the gospel. If you're going to love like Christ, if you're going to have a mission, the mission is to get to heaven, and the path to get there is being faithful to the gospel. And so in a way, that's where Joshua comes back in, even though he knew nothing of the gospel. But you have to be a strong and faithful man in the Lord if you're going to lead the family to heaven. And how do you do that? In the Catholic way, obviously the sacraments are foremost. So you're all here because you know that we need to worship God in the context of the Holy Mass, in spirit and in truth, as St. John says earlier in his gospel. And then confession. We need confession. And husbands need to be the leader of the family in reconciliation. And then, of course, within the context of the Mass, we have the Most Holy Eucharist. And that brings us to the gospel that we have today. I mentioned this before in our 5-week vacation, if you will, in John's gospel, that no one can live the life of Christ without Christ. And so Christ, in his goodness, has said, "I leave my body and blood for you." And so when we look at the crucifix and we think that's the first way that Jesus handed over his body, the second way is in the Holy Mass, in the Most Holy Eucharist. There we look upon the dead body, well, ours is living in the depiction, but on the cross we think of Jesus dying for us. But when we receive his body and blood in the Holy Mass, it's not the dead Jesus, it's the living, resurrected Jesus. And what's the purpose? We heard it last week and we heard it the week before. Unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life within you. He who eats my flesh and drinks my blood has eternal life, and I will raise him on the last day. So the Eucharist has to be part of the mission of leading the family to heaven. Because we're not going to live the life of Christ individually or collectively without Christ, without his real, true, and substantial presence in the Most Holy Eucharist. And so then that brings us to the conclusion of the Bread of Life discourse. The penultimate part of the gospel gives us one of the saddest things in all of the gospel. They are disciples of Jesus Christ. These are people who are going where Jesus goes because they want to hear him. And they say, "This is a hard teaching. Who can accept it?" And away they go. I'm guessing that everyone in this church right now knows someone who has left the Catholic faith. They might have left it over the Most Holy Eucharist. Maybe they could not accept that Jesus Christ, the eternal Son of God, could become man and then could even debase himself so much as to be present in what looks like bread and wine. Or maybe they left because of a moral issue. Or maybe they left because of a laziness issue. And so our duty then is to pray. Because one of the things that we sometimes forget as Catholics is we want everyone in the whole world to be a Catholic. We want everyone in the whole world to know Jesus Christ and the love of God revealed through Jesus Christ. And we want them to know and love him in the most holy Eucharist. And so if we personally struggle with anything like that, then we should beg the Lord, help me to know and love you in your church. Because that's what St. Paul said. I say this, speaking about husbands and wives, in reference also to Christ and the church, because this is a profound mystery. The unity of the head with the body, the unity of the bridegroom, Christ, with his bride, the church, and the way that he continually hands himself over for us. And so I think St. Peter, then, the last word in the gospel today, gives us this beautiful profession of faith. When the Lord turns to them, we get to see a powerful respect for their free will. Will you too go away? And you know what St. Peter says, Lord, to whom would we go? You have the words of everlasting life, and we have come to know and to believe that you are the Holy One of God. And in a certain way, every time we come into this church, we make an act of faith. I mean, obviously, when we have Mass, we make the profession of faith. But when you walk into the church and you plunge your hand into the holy water to remind yourself that you have been baptized into the blood of Christ and saved by that blood through baptism, and then you get to your pew. And here's the Eucharistic act of faith. You drop down on one knee in honor of the King of Kings who's in that tabernacle. And so what our bodies do should be an outward sign of what's happening interiorly, an act of faith. Who would we go to? You have the words of eternal life, and we are convinced that you are the Son of God. And you could tag on to that, who has done everything that we need so that we could live together with him in heaven forever.